Yes, of course, I give this title because so many people are so unsure if niche means anything precise, anything meaningful, anything useful, and of course you can guess that I wish to have an affirmative answer of this question. And this is my list. First I will talk very shortly about the connection between ecological and evolutionary theory, and then I try to provide what I consider as a precise notion of niche, then talk about some more specific issues, and later discuss some of the controversies about niche. And you know, this is the question of Grandpa of Joel, and there are essentially two kinds of answer. In ecology, we think that different species occupy different niches and they are coexisting because there is no competition between them, or at least weak. In evolutionary theory, we usually think that different species sit on different peaks on the adaptive landscape, and this is a very different picture and issue. Is how to mathematically unify these two very different pictures. And underlying here, the way of thinking is that the fittest win. Here, the way of thinking is that species coexist by reduced competition. The question is what reduced competition means. Here, it doesn't mean anything because the fittest win. This is the issue. What is the reduced competition? In a Lotka-Volterra model, everybody knows that this coefficient is called that competition coefficient, and this defines the strength of competition between species I and j. We can generalize it for an arbitrary model that the strength of competition is a derivative of the growth rate of one species with respect to the density of the another one. So the strength of competition is related to density frequency dependence in population. So the population regulation, so there is no meaning of the term strength of competition for a fixed landscape. This is what I want to stress at the very beginning, and Joel and Ulf already essentially told the same. So we need a kind of landscape. Landscape is the fitness as a function of a trait. And this landscape depends on the density distribution along the trait. So this is a mapping from a function to a function. Essentially, this is the same as the G function of Joel, of course, and the strength of competition between two different traits is the proper derivative of the growth rate with respect to the densities, and my main trick will be to assume that this mapping goes through a set of variables which I call regulating variables, and I can chain rule these derivatives. So the point is that strength of competition, the niche concept works only on a density-dependent or regulated landscape. Whether I say density or frequency-dependent is just a question of viewpoint. It was a big debate whether adaptive dynamics has any message for speciation. Basically, two reasons for first, many people especially population genetics community, felt that adaptive dynamics is derived from some very strange special assumptions, and I would like to tell, and I cannot provide the mathematical background here, that adaptive dynamics is just a mathematical concept, consequence of the regulated landscape concept and nothing else. For asexual evolution of a continuous trait, it's a direct consequence of that regulated landscape concept. And the another issue is that whether it is applicable for sexual organisms. And what I can say here is that, of course, when there is an uphill evolution on a landscape, it works very similarly for an asexual or a sexual population. And when we consider the branching in a minimum, then, of course, sexual reproduction means a lot, and there is a separate evolutionary problem of emergence of reproductive isolation, but because of the, I think Joel explained this emergence of the minimum, of course it is generically true that the minimum selects against the intermediates, and whether this in the very end selects for reproductive isolation, it's obviously it depends on the details of sexual selection, which I will not talk about it, but at least the ecological background, the shape of the fitness function dictate that isolation is advantageous. So this was just the background, and you know, I talk about niche. Ulf already talked about a lot about the history. I will not repeat it. Only one thing what I want to stress, that since the 80s, it became the general view that Lotka Volterra is useless, the niche is vague, and the competitive exclusion is unsure, and then there was no replacement of niche theory, but people talk a lot about the meaninglessness of niche theory, and this is what I would like to go beyond. Competitive exclusion, everybody explained already. What I want to say here, that in this paper of Garrett Hardin, he mentioned a workshop in the 40s in which there was two camps. One assumed that competitive exclusion principle, Gauss's principle, is a logical necessity. And the other group was not sure and considered it as a hypothesis which somebody should test in the field. And Garrett Hardin wrote in 60 that after 20 years, these two camps still existed. I think, no, it is 50 years after this paper, and probably these two camps of ecologists still exist. So my goal is to make the competitive exclusion principle precise, and this will be, I will consider that as a precise theory of niche. Now, so the starting point of the population regulation feedback loop, growth rates affect the change of the population sizes, and population sizes affects back growth rates. And I assume that this regulation goes through a list of regulating variables, for instance, resource concentrations, if there is some predation regulation, then I have to account about it in these variables. Also, maybe regulation in the bad years and the good years are different, so I have to include here. The point is that I will not say anything which is non-tautological. Anything which I'm saying is nothing else that if you say any complication to me, I will just say that, well, I account about it in the regulating variables, so I will be fine. This is my message. Whether it is useful or not, it is your judgment. Okay, and of course, growth rate may depend on external parameters which are not included in this loop. And then I want to make a trivial statement which is not generally understood. Many people was very busy to finding mathematical proof of minimal similarity of coexisting species, and it never worked out well. And the very simple reason is the following, that if you have an arbitral model with many parameters, you always can choose the parameters such that the fitness level are just the same. And this, of course, they will coexist. They will not outcompete each other. So there is no such thing as an absolute limit of similarity. The real issue is what is the condition of having a robust coexistence, which is not an artificial production of fine-tuning the parameter. And I want to calculate the condition of robust coexistence in my system when the growth rate depends on the densities through the regulating variables. This is the equilibrium equation. If in a fluctuating environment, this is a long-term equilibrium somehow. And this is just an implicit differentiation of the equilibrium densities. The bold means the vector of the densities with respect to the external parameters. This is the derivative, and the point is that this is the matrix. The growth rate with respect to the densities should be inverted. Then the determinant of this matrix is in the denominator. And of course, if I chain rule this derivative of this with respect to that through the regulating variables, I will get. And of course, this is the strength of competition. And what this matrix, that I can say that the J is the determinant of this matrix is small. It is in the derivative. In the denominator, so then if it is small, then for a small change in the external parameter, the density change is huge. That in this case, the coexistence is not robust because the regulation of the community is weak. So the condition of robust coexistence is that the determinant J should not go near to zero. And if I chain rule through the regulating variables, and this derivative is the sensitivity of the growth rate with respect to the regulating variables, and this is the impact of the density on the regulating variables, then it's relatively easy to see that this determinant is not near to zero when all of this sensitivity vectors are different and all of these impact vectors are different. You know, index here is the index of the species, and it is vector because it refers to the all of the regulating variables. The more precise statement is that the determinant is majorated by the product of two volumes. One volume is the volume of the parallelopipeds of an impact vector, the another one is the volumes of the parallelopiped of the sensitivity vectors. These are so the summary is that if either the impact or the sensitivity vector similars, then these volumes are small, the determinant is small, and the regulation is weak, and the sensitivity is high, there is no robust coexistence. So robust coexistence requires segregation in the impact and sensitivity vectors. Of course, impact and sensitivity is something like the resource utilization function in the classical Lotka-Volterra model, I have to say that this species eat that resource with that strength. More precisely, one have to specify how strongly it depends on that food and how strongly it depletes that food, and the theory will be precise. It means that I have to identify this niche space of Hutchinson, and I have to identify this niche space as the regulating set of the regulating factors, and the niche of a species is classically given by a resource utilization function. Here it is given by impact and sensitivity. Imagine that if this is the niche of this squirrel, then we somehow think that in this volume the resource utilization of him is large, outside it is small. I have to repeat the same with impact and sensitivity. Now, keeping it in general, we have to recognize that the set of regulating factors may be a discrete set or a continuous one, like in Hutchinson picture I will show you immediately. And this segregation can be functional habitat or temporal segregations. And I want to explain this in the next part of my lecture. But here is a simulation by Peter Szabó. Peter sits somewhere here. Here, many of you probably know that when in the Lotka-Volterra model, a continuum of strategies can coexist with, for instance, Gaussian carrying capacity and Gaussian competitive kernel. This is the competition kernel. This is the width of the... this is the carrying capacity curve. This is the width of the competition kernel, and this is the distribution of the strategies, a continuous distribution. Now, if Peter put a small perturbating peak here, the species distribution became discrete. Here he perturbed the carrying capacity with a fractal function, and these things became discrete, and the typical distance between two species correspond to the width of the competition kernel. And the message is that there is no such thing as absolute limiting similarity. If we fine-tune your model, even a continuum of species can coexist, but it is structurally unstable, and an arbitrarily small perturbation can destroy it. We have very complicated mathematical papers of it, but the take-home message is that the original idea of niche segregation by niche width is roughly works, despite it doesn't have a precise mathematical background on that simplicity. No. This is about the structure of the niche space. How many time I still have?
8 minutes.
8 minutes, okay. Then here is the discrete niche space. For instance, I have a warm and a cold patch, and a small food and a large food. This is a functional segregation. This is a spatial segregation. And obviously, I have four different possibility of adaptation. I have four different niches. At most four species can coexist on this food. The important thing is whether the size differences and the location differences are in some sense parallel. No, this is the same in a continuous case, a continuous food size or a continuous temperature range along a spatial gradient, and then there is, and these are the regulating variables of the food density. There is a continuum of regulating variables, actually a two-dimensional continuum. This is like the Hutchinsonian niche space, and this is a niche space of four discrete elements. Of course, not the three-dimensional spaces, the niche space, it would be meaningless. Species partition this two-dimensional space and not the three-dimensional one. This was a model by András Szilágyi. It is just a spatial segregation between two habitats with different evolutionary optima, with migration between them. Mathematical technicalities doesn't matter, no. The point is that when the difference between the species go to zero, the range of coexistence with respect to some parameter vanishes here. And if the migration go to infinity, then the spatial niche segregation disappear and the region of coexistence vanishing here. And model by Gyuri Barabás, if for instance, in a model, we have a seed size distribution and phosphate and nitrate as a discrete resources, but there is some temporal fluctuation, then we have to consider this regulating regulating variables as a function of time. So time became a new niche variables, and in this way we can handle variable environment. Since the 80s, people started to say that niche theory valid only for equilibrium resource competition, but actually I can do the same with any kind of regulating variables which incorporate any kind of interactions. And if I have, we have stationary fluctuations, then it can be incorporated into the theory. The more modern issue is the neutrality. Neutral mutants are very common in population genetics. Why don't have it in ecology? The important point is that neutral mutants are neutral because it is it doesn't do anything for the phenotype. And we have many biochemical reasons to have mutants which are do nothing for the phenotype. And nobody consider in population genetics mutations which change the phenotype but does not change the fitness. But this is how many ecologists think about neutral species. Of course, if we have two different species which physiologically fully equivalent, then of course they do not need niche segregation for robust coexistence. But if we have two different, very different species, then having zero fitness difference without raising is very unlikely. It is not true that trade-offs makes them equivalent. It is not true. It requires a very special trade-off curve, which of course structurally unstable. Another often say people that if it is possible to have neutral coexistence and niche-based coexistence, then anything in between, why not? A continuum between them. Look at the simulation of András. This is the range of coexistence when we go to neutrality. And if we take a linear path here, we can see that they can coexist here, neutrally, or can coexist here, non-neutrally, but not in between. And the statement is that this picture is general. Of course, if we go took this one, of course, we have the continuum, but this is not structurally stable. And what is really important, many of you know that in adaptive dynamics, similar strategies can coexist near to the singular point. This is just this. So the near to the singular point, we have the continuum between neutrality and nisaggregation, and then we can move continuously from one species into two. Okay? I cannot explain this. Well, I don't know whether I have time for it. These people say that they discovered that even very similars can coexist, and the model also structurally unstable. I will explain to anybody. So I think there is a formal theory of niche. Robust coexistence require this segregation, and so the niche space is the set of regulating variables, impact and sensitivity describe the niches, and it can describe different kind of niche segregations. And for evolution, what I would like to say that if we consider trivial that fitness depends on the population itself, which automatically means fitness frequency dependence, then it is natural to have branching evolution. With fixed fitness landscape, it is not true. And I close with the statement that this corresponds to the Darwinian scenario association, as already mentioned by Jim this morning, and Liz will talk about tomorrow. I mentioned three posters here, which hangs there, which specifies some of this. And this is my long list of colleagues. And okay.
Maybe I again allow for one question.
Yes, Peter. So when I understand you correctly, your definition of niche does not depend on this community closure, in contrast to Ulf's definition.
Is community that
closure, so that you have the maximum number, everybody sits at a peak, and there is no area in trade space that looks out over the surface. So that is not a requirement of your definition, right?
No. It is a consequence that segregation, in the sense I'm saying, is a requirement of robust coexistence. So you fill the niche space, as I defined, then you want to introduce additional species, then you have to fine-tune the parameters which kill the advantage of or disadvantage of the other species, because the feedback loop will not regulate the new species independently to zero.
All right, so let's thank all three speakers again.